Anyway, it's just a joy to see you. All the people before this session have raved about you. Hey, I see some old friends here and some new friends. But I wanted to say this and then just pray for you and bless you, that it's really a treasure to us that God has brought you here. And we believe that he brought you here in the same way he brought us here. The late 1980s from Northern California with no idea what our assignment was. And I want to say this, that there's something very supernatural about the existence of Life Center, and I suppose that could be said about any church, but this, you are in the very building you're in is the fulfillment of a prophetic word that was given in 1992 with absolutely zero context in terms of, like, we had plans or we knew what it meant or anything like that. Or the prophet, it was Kim Clement, we had just gotten to know him maybe for a year or so. He had been with us. And he prophesied and described this property. And the thing is, it did not yet exist in the form that we found it in the year 2000. AMP bought the property, tore apart the part of this building that pre-existed that word, and down to steel and concrete, and expanded it and brought it up to really state-of-the-art tech standards in the year 1994, years 94 and 95 was when it was redone. And in 2000, it was a gift from God to us as an opportunity. It wasn't paid for. we by a miracle we got it, and by the skin of our teeth and by the faithfulness of God, we're here today. And so I just want, the reason I say that is I believe God brought you here for a purpose that's every bit as significant as that story I just described. And we've seen this happen time after time, that God brings people here for a season of equipping, that there are words that they may come as something you recognize as a prophetic word, or it may just be a promise or a desire that God has implanted on your heart. And my prayer is, and I want to say there's a grace here for those things to grow and expand and bear fruit. And so we understand we're here, we're an equipping center, we're here to serve the purpose of God, not only for this body, but in your lives. And so many of you may be here for a season of equipping, and God will release you into something that you had only wished or dreamed you could do. And I believe that's a grace that's on this house, if you want to call it a house. You know, it's on what God is doing here and continues to do. So some of you, many of you, and we hope you all stay and prosper and are super fruitful right here in this area, but some of you, this will be a season of equipping, and God will open doors, and we understand that, and just ask you this, that when it's time for that next assignment, come share it with us, be, you know, have that benefit of input and counsel, and give us the honor of praying for you and blessing you. We don't give people a hard time. We celebrate what God does. So, amen. So this is, you know, maybe the only membership class you'll ever be in that we say, hey, we know some of you will be leaving, but we understand that's our role, that we're serving the purposes of God. So I have to go and be part of the service, but I want to bless you and thank God for you. And I've met a few of you, and I know there's amazing stories here, and we're just blessed by God that you're part of this. Father, thank you for these treasures, each one its own story, each one a trophy of your grace, each one filled with purpose and potential that's guided by you. I pray that there would be a supernatural grace on each one here, on families, households, businesses, ministries, relationships, that that they'll step into a season of growth and a season of opportunity. Father, that we might all bear much fruit and fruit that remains, that gives you glory in the earth. Bless these precious brothers and sisters, and bless Anne as she speaks in Jesus' name. Amen. Anne Chandy as well. Whoops, who moved?
Hi, guys. I'm Amelia Palomares, for those of you who haven't met me yet. We just have a couple quick things. You got a name tag today when you came in. Make sure it's visible. We're going to pray for you at the end of the class, and that way everyone can see your name. We are going to... Sorry, when we're praying for you at the end, make sure it's visible. Sorry. You in your packet, you have three forms, a family information form, an about you form, and a getting involved form. We consider you turning all three of those in as your indication that you would like to be part of our membership here at the church. And we're going to acknowledge the new members in both services on October 10th. So whichever service you normally come to, you can just come to. We'll have you stand up and we'll bless you as a congregation. And I think we list your name on the screen. We do need those forms today at the end of the class. If you don't have a chance or you forgot them or something, just talk to me at the end of the class so I know that you still want to turn them in and still want to be a part of what's happening. If you're a whole family, you'll need to turn in one family information form if you haven't already turned them in separately. I think that's everything. This is... And Chandi's next.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm the lone straggler among the staff to introduce myself to you. I'm Chandi Thomas. My wife and I, we've been married 19 years. I feel like a little kid. You know, I'm like 4 and a half, almost 5. I've been saying, telling people all this year, we're going to be 20 years next year. And so I was like, babe, we're 19 years. Just say 19. We'll do 20 next year.
It's your 20th year.
Yeah, it is a 20th year. You sound like Sarah's dad. Yes. and we have four children. Our oldest is a senior in high school. All four kids go to Harrisburg Christian. So we have three daughters and one son. So oldest is a daughter, Mer. She's 17. My son is 14, Zion. Kashmir is 12. And Sonali is 8. And she was out. The 8-year-old was out in the backyard building the deck with me. So you get a picture of what the four... the kids are like and the family life is like. How I got saved, I'm from India originally. I grew up in Dubai. And my high school year last year, I wasn't walking with the Lord. My parents were having these meetings. I went over to have some food after the meeting and then had this momentary conversation with the pastor. They always try to get me because I was kind of like kind of the odd guy, odd kid, black sheep, whatever you want to call it. And I'm used to those conversations, if you die today, will you go to heaven, that kind of thing. But this one time, the pastor came, I knew what he was coming to ask me. I've answered this question so many times, didn't want it, but this time, it was different. And when he asked me that question, I felt, not the fear, but I'm like, I need God. I remember thinking and feeling, I need God in my life. And that's how I got saved. It was a simple, momentary thing. But for the next 6 months, nothing changed in my life. But after 6 months, I wasn't even planning to come to the U.S. I didn't have that American dream to come or anything like that, like most of my friends did. But things started to just change in my life. I came here. My sister was in Maryland. I went to Messiah College, got connected to Life Center, got connected to another revival congregation in Maryland. And those 4 years were formative for me in God. And I pursued God the best way I knew how, made a lot of mistakes along the way. But an amazing thing, Mr. Miller, you won't remember me because I was skinnier, had long curly black hair. My first class at Messiah in 94 was with you, organizational management. I remember the case of the forgotten folder. One of the early assignments in class. I've shared this story all these years. It shifted my life. That one moment shifted my life. I've been sharing Mr. Miller's story all these years. And I've been hearing that Mr. Miller, Mike Miller from Messiah, girls basketball coach. I'm like, Cam, can't be the same person. I haven't seen him around. Anyway, thank you. We're so glad you're here. Anyway, there's more to that. And this is amazing. This is a glimpse of how God works in our lives. He's patient. 20 some, I don't even, my math is terrible. that he carefully attends to all the moments of our lives, and he sees them, and he brings like fulfillment in all of those things, and it makes it richer. So my life was in an acceleration during those years, but in that moment, it didn't feel like acceleration. It just felt like normal life. We're doing what we know to do. Looking back, oh my gosh, my whole life was on like warp speed, you know. And so, long story that brought me here. How long have we been on staff? Have I been on staff? Recently, 4 years. My wife and I, we were in missions in Cyprus for 8 years prior to that. And before that, we were here on staff again for an earlier season for 6 years, leading the Joshua School, which was a discipleship ministry school here, our own school, out of which some of our staff, our youth pastors, our children's pastor, all came through that school. So we were here doing a lot of mission trips back then. My role at Life Center, I'm an associate pastor. That means you do whatever needs to be done. You're available. Yeah. So that's what I do. And also, we have an apostolic network called Clear River Apostolic Network. I'm the director of that network. And I'm really excited. This is a good rumor you can spread. We're looking to launch another segment of this network called Clear River Entrepreneurs Network for all the business people in our community to get connected to, have form and have shape, and have a voice together with all the things that are happening. And there's so many dimensions to that. It's just literally unfolding every week after week as I talk to people. So that's in a nutshell. Anything I'm missing, Anne, that I should? That's it. Thank you, guys. Great to meet you. So many of you who are traveling an hour and a half from Frederick and other places, there are people coming from Westchester. We love you guys. We love that. We love that. This morning I woke up, and I'll just share this. I was reading Psalm 100. Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. I just felt gripped by this, that we are His people, and He has set the boundaries for us to live in and feed off of His goodness. So thank you for being part of our life here together. Bless you.
Listen to that forever. The testimonies of God's goodness. Well, I'm thinking that possibly you are the most attractive life experience group we've ever had. Maybe there are some others that were more attractive, but when I came to visit for when John and Patty were speaking, I thought, what a great group. So I know we say it every year, but everyone has been raving about you. And remember, October 10th, not next Sunday, but the Sunday after, is when the screen will have your name, but probably not yours. It was up last time. Okay. We're just really honored that you're considering connecting with us and that you're interested in learning more. And I'm Anne, if you haven't met me. I walk all over the place and you're going to be turning your head right and left, right and left. You're good at that though, right? Okay, good. I'm Anne, married to Charles IV. This is our 50th year. So see, he can say it's his 20th year. We can say it's our 50th year. Still a few more months till the anniversary. But it's really hard to consolidate 70 years into a few stories. So I'm going to do the best I can. And some of you have heard portions of our story through just the messages that Charles speaks. And then he also has a book called Glow in the Dark. You're going to find that over in, you can find that in the bookstore. And the first 70 pages is our story. From his perspective. We got to remember that. I need to get writing because I have a... Yeah, I need to give my opinion. So, but my story is that I was born in San Francisco, a non-Christian home, and my parents had a cabin 3 hours west, east, not west, that would be out in the ocean, 3 hours east in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and that was Charles' hometown. So when we were 14, we met at the lake, and he told his friend that he wanted to marry me. First time he saw me, pointed me out. And 7 years later, he did marry me. But we were mostly friends for those 7 years. And that's probably all another story that we could tell. But while we were engaged, we were in search of pure water. From a pure water stream, and it's all sort of a picture. There was a big storm, and it caused our vehicle to break down, and someone came with an active service and repaired our car for us. It cost $2, and we wanted to pay him back, and so he said, well, just go to church sometime and put it in the offering. Well, see, our car broke down at the nearest place was in the dark. It was in the dark. Was a church with a light, and we thought maybe if we could use their phone, but there was no phone, and so they asked us, could we wait for their Bible study to be over? And we were hippies, flower children, so they shouldn't be in a hurry. So we said sure, but they did take us, and so they took us and repaired our car. It cost $2, and then so sent us away. We didn't want to have bad karma, so we wanted to go realize we're from all non-Christian homes. So this, we tried. We were seekers. We tried all types of things, and we wanted to pay our $2. So we went to the church that was closest to us to put the $2 in the offering. But it was a Sunday night, and they didn't take an offering. We worked on the day, and Sunday they didn't take an offering. So we had to come back again and again and again. They never took an offering on Sunday night. But that was the trick God played on us. And during, it was a little funny because we just walked in, and in the yoga classes and the things that we were a part of, you wanted to be in the front row. So we walked in barefoot. I had a purple dress that I had made out of an India print bedspread, and Charles had his very long hair. We just walked in and sat in the front row. Was anybody here second service last week? At the very end, remember, I got up and I talked about this lady that picked out the most despicable kid because he was saying things that were leading people the wrong way. And that lady was in the church, and she watched us walk in and sit in the front row. Yes, her prayers were answered after so many years. And I often think of that man who fixed our car. He has no idea what happened to our life. But it's like you got to hear 20 years later a tiny little inkling of something that you did. And I doubt, maybe, I'm sure he's in heaven now because he's older than us, but, or maybe not, but anyway, so many times I think we're going to be in heaven before we find out what the little act of service we did and how it just... It was a chain, it was started this chain of events that got Charles and Ann saved that affected even you today. How crazy is that? So we wait and we see, and sometimes we find out. I love that introduction. Thank you, Chandi. We were actually at those meetings invited to some Jesus People meetings. We said, there's some meetings you would like more, and there was just a bunch of kids crowded into a house, maybe 70 kids crowded into a living room, dining room. They pushed the table back, and we felt the presence of the Lord. And so we were drawn by the presence of the Lord and drawn by all the miracle stories that were transpiring during that Jesus movement revival. And we gave our lives to the Lord, became Christians 1 month before we were married. We were already engaged to be married in June, and we became Christians in May. So it's very, very unlikely that two non-Christians would get married, and it's just the story is so unlikely that, you know, most of my friends say, oh yeah, I picked him out of the youth group because he was so awesome, or oh, I picked her out because her family was so amazing, this amazing Christian family. No, we were just two really random kids who would probably win the prize in our home, in our home high school of least likely to become a pastor. Him and his high school, me and my high school, definitely very unlikely. So we know that it's extremely remarkable, this journey that God has us on. So we became Christians, and then 1 year later, Charles had 1 year left as a scientist at UC Berkeley. He had taken a year off to make some money. And I noticed he only wanted to study the Bible day in, day out, all he wants. So I said, why don't you go to study the Bible? Why don't you study something you want to study? And we heard there was something called a Bible college, he said, where he could learn about the Bible, which he so loved by that time. I understand, we didn't grow up in a Christian home, so we didn't know there's a Bible college and that you could have prophetic words over you or... anyway, we went to the Bible college so he could, the best degree he could get where he could study the Bible the most, had a pastoral internship at the end. So he went and did his pastoral internship ministry. And at the end of that, the pastor said, I want you to be on staff at my church. And Charles said, well, what would you want me to do? He said, well, why don't you do the children's ministry? You know, the Sunday school. We said, we've never even been to Sunday school. We don't even know what Sunday school is. And he said, I don't care. I just see something in you. And as long as there's, he said to us, as long as there's people like you, I have hope for the future. And now I know exactly what he's talking about. When I see these amazing young people, I just say, as long as I see that hunger in you, I have hope that I have hope for the future. And so as he saw it in us, we see it in others. So that was 46 years ago, and we've been pastors ever since. Very unlikely story, but yes, we've been pastors for 46 years. And along the way, we had two children, Elizabeth and Anastasia. They're in their mid-40s. And we have seven grandchildren. They are 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. And one little late-in-life six-year-old. So, maybe sometime we'll show a picture of all these amazing, fun grandchildren. So we became full-time pastors in that church where we walked. We were pastors there for 10 years, and where we walked in barefoot and sat in the front row, that church. They saw something in us too. And they, so we were very happily pastors there. In our hometown, by this time, my whole family lived there. Of course, Charles's mother had taught every single child in that whole community to read. So we were so well known. And Charles was like I remember I said, if you were here on Sunday, I said the Cottage Prayer Meetings prayed that he would not become the student body president because they were so afraid of his influence. And yeah, but he did become the student body president. So they thought their prayers weren't answered, but their prayers were answered because of that, he had sat in the principal's office for the first two periods of the day, and that caused him to never be able to hang out with his stoner friends. So he had to clean up his whole life, and it really set a great direction for him. And then, of course, a few years later, he became a Christian. So I think that's true for us now. There are people speaking the wrong thing, and we're praying for them, and we're thinking we're not getting the right answer, but slowly, yes, something is at work for the people we're praying for. And they're, because Charles, I mean, his brother almost could not be a secret agent. He was a spy, his older brother, and he almost was kicked off because Charles had some communist periodicals that he subscribed to. So he touted, spoke all the wrong things. And there are people today who are speaking all the wrong things, but I have faith and confidence that God can grab them and cause them to be spokespeople for God. So that's a bit of a tangent. I'm going to go back to where I was. We were full-time pastors at the chapel in the Pines. We were part of the church for 17 years, but we were pastors for 10 years. It grew from 100 to 1,000 in that little mountain town during that time we were there. So it was really very special time. And you name it, we did it, like Johnny was talking about. We did the bulletin. We were the janitors, pastors of the nursery and the children and the youth and the college age and the missions and the women's. We did the prayer meetings, the home groups. We even did the worship. Can you imagine that? We did the worship. So we didn't really understand it, but we started a 7-year nonstop prayer meeting. And the 7-year nonstop prayer meeting, we would always pray that we would be in the center of God's will. And so when our lives began to unravel, and this wonderful place where we worked in our hometown, where everyone knew us, everything, all kinds of crazy false accusations and really unfounded everything, we thought it was so terrible, but really God was answering the prayer of our heart that we would be in the center of God's revival or in the next move of God. So when things began to fall apart for us, which we couldn't understand, it was like Joseph and his brethren. Like, we felt like our brethren were throwing us in a pit, and we didn't know he was actually, God had a bigger plan. It was really something good. And I know that's happened to some of you. Just cannot understand why it seemed so wrong. So not right. And, you know, 20, 10, 15, I don't know, maybe after our lifespan, we understand why it unfolded the way it did. But we knew we had to leave. We thought, if we don't leave, we're going to split this church that we love so much. So if we just sneak away with nobody, we thought maybe we needed to leave, but there was no place to leave to. So our friend Iverna Tompkins sent us this letter and said, there's a church in Pennsylvania looking for a pastor, and have you prayed about it? And we said, no, because we're not going to Pennsylvania. And but every week she would call and say, have you prayed about going to that little church in Pennsylvania? And so we, just to get her off her back, Charles said he went to pray, and he hadn't heard the Lord in so long. We were in so much pain. It was so confusing to us why everything was transpiring like the way it was. And he was praying, said, send that little church a pastor. And the Lord spoke to him and said, I am, it's you. So he came home and he said, Ann, did you pray about that little church in Pennsylvania? And I said, no. He said, well, go pray about it. Well, I went out to pray and I said, I am so wounded. I just don't have a lot of confidence that I could hear your voice in such a painful, I just had so much pain. I wasn't thinking right. So I said, I think I'm going to put out a fleece for you. If we put our house on the market tomorrow and someone walks in and buys it full price cash the first day, then we'll go to Pennsylvania. I came back and I told Charles, he said, that's so awesome. Because he knew it would never happen. So the next morning, we put our house on the market. No sign, nothing. And a man walked in and bought it at 10 a.m. Full price cash. Now, we don't even have a house. We have to leave. And so 10 days later, we had everything packed, and we were driving across the United States. And when we arrived, the Lord actually told me. I mean, they gave us a choice. They said, we will pay $2,000 toward your travel, or you will pay for you to fly out here and meet us all. And So the Lord spoke to me and said, you're not going to like what you see, so don't fly out to look. Charles didn't know that. I just knew we were not going to like it, but that this was what God wanted to do. So we arrived, and it was just four couples. And after about 4 months, they had a church split. And two of the couples left. So now we've come all the way from California to Pennsylvania with our family, with our children. We put them in school and disrupted everything. And now we don't even have a church. So we closed the church. And I said, well, Charles, I don't feel we can take the kids out of the middle of the school year. Let's just wait till the end of the school year and just take me to that church where I cry. Because we had visited some different churches at night. And I said, just take me back to that church. You know, the one where I walk in and I just start crying? Do you know, some people have said, well, it's those fog machines. I don't know why those fog, they make me cry all the time. These they think it's the fog machines. Some people think that. So I said, take me to the church where I cry. And so we went. And it was refreshing to sit in the back of a church for 4 months, and just, we didn't know anyone, we didn't have to do anything. We could just go to a church and cry and recover. Lots of people came and tried to lead me to the Lord because they saw how, so maybe four people led me to the Lord during that time. And I said, so, you know, because they saw me, and I thought, so wonderful, great workers they have here in this church, identifying that there was a need. So after 4 months, the pastor noticed us sitting in the back of the church, and he had actually seen us when we came, because we went to the ministerial meetings of the whole greater Harrisburg area. And he said, he invited Charles, he said, would you like to speak on Wednesday night? And Charles said, sure. You know, because he hadn't preached in a decent church forever. So he enjoyed his speaking. It was quite notable, remarkable. And then afterwards, the pastor handed him a prophecy and said, could you read this and see if it makes any sense to you? It was a prophecy about God bringing a man in the fall who would da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They knew it was a significant prophecy. In fact, the man, Billy Joe Hyslop, had given this prophecy and gotten on an airplane. And that was his last. And he died in the airplane. And so it was his last word. So they're all looking for this word that they knew was a word from God that they had given to this Word Fellowship Church. And so he handed it to Charles and he said, read this, see if it makes any sense. So we read it and we said, well, you know, we'll pray about it. I mean, it seems possible. He didn't wait for our answer. The next Sunday, he reads the prophecy and he says, Charles Stock, stand up. This is the man. No, do you know who this man is right here? No, nobody knows you. Like, maybe two people. I don't know who knows you. We were a stranger. And he stood us up and said, this is the man. So we came on staff. But the painful, sad thing is that 3 months later, this pastor left with in an immoral situation, and there was no one to take the church except us, who had done the children's ministry and the youth ministry and the prayer ministry and all that stuff that was training. And there were about 500 people in the church at that time, and it diminished. You know, some people left. They were so brokenhearted. But I write it out like this. Our departure, so 33 years ago, as we were just barely recovering from the trauma of our departure from California, we were faced with the job of helping 500 devastated people by the gifted founding pastor's departure. And that's why we did it, because our hearts, I mean, we didn't want to be here in a Word of Faith church in Pennsylvania. We had, the town we lived in was like an extension of Yosemite. It was a stunning town. And we were culturally very different than the people here. And so it just wasn't easy. And then as soon as I get my bathing suit on, it would get cloudy and rain. There was no such thing as that. In California, where we lived, the sun started shining in May, and there was one cloud that came in August and gave a little sprinkle. Yeah, so you could count on, anyway, the weather was different, the culture was different, so many things were different. But you know what? Our hearts were broken for that group of 500 people who were devastated. We thought, we're going to help till as long as they can need help, till they can get a good pastor in here. So we waited for that good pastor to come. No good pastor came. And I think it was so unlikely, and our dislodging from California was so strange. We were well loved. I mean, all our family lived there. The church went from 100 to 1,000. Like, what in the world? Why would this couple have to ever leave? Part of it, I mean, it's many, many multifaceted, but the man that we worked with, there were a man who was our best friend. He was actually the football captain while Charles was the student body president. And but we found out later, a year later, he had a brain tumor. You know, sometimes when you have a brain tumor, your behavior, you make things up. You see things differently. Like if there's ever any wild shootings, they check first with autopsy to see if that person had a brain tumor. So this man had so that was part of what played into it. It's all a mystery. There we found out there's some curses by some witches. They found our effigies on hooks hanging in their dens. So that made it so I never slept for one year. I never slept. So then I was going crazy. Then they said, well, your wife's crazy, so now you can't work at the church. Until they found that those, so we actually do believe that there's such a thing as witchcraft. It drove us out. But do you know, as soon as we got out, We drove to Nevada. First night, I slept. I think the witchcraft had a territorial spark. We were planting churches all along the Gold Rush. This was one of the towns we had planted a church. So we read the book Needless Casualties of War, and we realized that we were actually out of our sphere to some of the things we were doing. And so we identified the devil is real. Yep. Joseph's brethren did throw us in a pit. But God had a bigger plan and was all used for now, to affect the lives now. So our departure was so crazy. And our planting here was equally crazy, like, you stand up, you're the one. No, it was, you're going to be the pastor of this church. Someone nobody even knew. We were just in the back crying. That is at the point where we started to understand that this was really about a bigger picture. Something much bigger than our lifetime. And we were just a teeny part of a much bigger miracle. And that's why I'm telling you this story today, so that you can understand that this is all part of something much bigger, that something we couldn't even orchestrate. And you probably sense that too. Like, what are the odds? There are so many what are the odds situations that happen around here. And I've been so happy that, were any of you here for a conference just 1 year ago when Sammy Rodriguez was here? Okay, a couple, yes. And he felt, it was Paul Martini that invited him. He'd never been to our church before. He didn't know us. And some couple decided to come. They saw it online to a church they'd never seen before. They decided they're going to sit in the congregation. And Sammy decides to tell a story about how when he was 14 years old, a man called him out and said, you're going to speak to presidents. And he was just a little kid. He was the choir director who were there for that. Yes. Sure enough, Sammy went out and there was a little couple sitting in the back. First visit ever to Life Center, and they looked at each other and said, do you think that could be our Sammy? And they met him out in the lobby, and yes, it was their Sammy. They had lost track of him for 35 years, had no idea that he was speaking to presidents and leaders all around the world, and that they're sort of like that thing that just happened today. When you said that word, then do you know what? We call it a Sammy Rodriguez now, because then you don't have to use so many words to describe it, but it's just weird. It's just completely special. It's so good. They happen all the time around here. I can't even tell you. They've probably happened to you. What, you turned around and you met who was sitting there? Like what, or that Chandi happened to recognize you and say that they're Sammy Rodriguez's, and they happen all the time. It's just a crazy supernatural environment. So the next years, I'm back to the storyline. The next years were a slow process of subtractions and additions, and people who didn't feel comfortable with us slowly left and found churches that were better for them. And then new people who liked us slowly came. And so there were additions and subtractions. But I'm going to move into 1994, where there's sort of the history of how there began to be a fire here at Life Center, or we call it a fire in the furnace. You might call it a spring where people come and get a drink. How did that happen? Well, the backdrop on it for me was the July of 1994. You see, this pastor had left us with a number of churches that he oversaw. And so we were overseeing those pastors. One of these wonderful, lovely couples from State College. called me one morning to say that their lovely oldest child, 11-year-old son, a horse fell on him and killed him. And they said, could you, you know, come and do the funeral? So we came to do the funeral 3 days later, and we thought it was interesting when we arrived because all the people were waiting outside, and they just sort of like parted, and they're all on this side, and Charles and I are walking into the front doors of the church. We open it up, and the pastor and his wife says to me, we're not going to do the funeral. I want you to go in first and raise my son from the dead. And that was a turning point in my life because I knew I had a powerless gospel. I wanted to help this dear lady so much. And I was devastated. And here we were, her overseers. And so she looked at me and said, you go in and raise the child from the dead. And people say, you didn't finish the story. Well, when we went in, the mom looked in the casket and said, oh, he doesn't want to come back. And she just laid on the floor and worshiped. But it was very disturbing to me because, first of all, I'd had all this disillusionment of what had transpired in California. And I had what I thought was a pretty powerless gospel. Couldn't even pray for a headache and get it to go away, or a cold. And this lady wanted me to raise her son from the dead. And though Andrew Womack, he's done that. If you were at the Supernatural Life Conference yesterday. So this incident was really a setup for me. And I'd been a pastor's wife for 22 years, and I was praying and loving God, but I was still shooting blanks. And so when a couple of pastors said, you know, you guys should go up to this place called Toronto, Pastor Friends, and we said, I was just so disillusioned. I said, okay, I'll go for 2 days in the middle of the week. You know, nobody knew we left, but just to Tuesday, Wednesday. And we got there, and I did not like what I saw. There were lots of people doing lots of stupid things. Some people were crying. Some people were laughing. And I had seen all these things before, and they hadn't changed anybody's life. I was looking for something that would change somebody's life. Where there was some kind of power to make a life-changing impact. And so I went back to the hotel room. I was so disgusted, and that was a battle I had with God. I think we all, when we face with something new, we have like this, you know, he offends our hearts, he offends our minds so he can expose our hearts. And so I'm there in the hotel room, and the Lord speaks to my heart and says, you know, it's the badger skin principle. This is the teaching my husband had done where the tabernacle of Moses out in the wilderness, all this great stuff, gold and purple cloth and amazing stuff, but it's all covered over with just a big brown skin. So from a distance, it looks like a big brown heap. And he said, would you get close enough to see if there's any glory inside? Even though it looks like a big brown heap to you? So I said, okay, based on that, I will go to the pastor's training meeting. And there was this theologian talking. And for some reason, he started to tell his story about his wife who had been so stricken by God. She was upstairs in the bedroom for 3 days in the bed, because she was so stricken by God, and they were from a very proper denomination. And these dignitaries were coming to the house, and he went out and bought. She's just in the bedroom, so he buys for her. He buys fish and chips. And hey, Tom, shut the door. You're going back out. That's okay. You can stay. You can listen. Tom's been here forever with me. Okay. So anyway, I went to the meeting, and the pastor shared the story about his wife. The dignitaries show up, and the husband buys fish and chips. And the wife comes downstairs to meet with the dignitaries, and she takes the fish and tosses one to each person and then takes the fries and dumps them in the middle of the table. And I thought, I've been a pastor's wife for 22 years. No pastor's wife in their right mind would ever do such a thing. Now, everybody has a credible witness. For some reason, that story made sense to me because it was my, you know, it was my life. I've seen some other people say, there's this like hyperactive four-year-old and the guest speaker comes by and blesses them and they fall down on the floor and they're perfectly still for 25 minutes. I said, oh, that's really God. So we all see that it's, we all have our own credible witness. So all of this to say, based on that, I said, okay, I'll let him pray for me. So I got in the prayer line, and I just stood there. And there were only four prayers, and there were so many people. And the little girl, there was one 13-year-old girl, and she just said, more, Lord. What? That's my whole prayer? Oh, my gosh. She's only 13. But they were playing that song. Let your all creation is longing for the unfolding of power. Would you release your anointing? Oh, God, could this be the hour? Let your glory fill this place. Let it go forth from here to the nations. And that was my prayer. All creation, I'm longing for the unfolding of your power. Something to help this mom whose child just died. Would you release your anointing? Could this be the hour? And so I cried and I prayed. But that wasn't really anything different because I always cried and prayed. I mean, you know, it's just me. You know, that was... Charles seemed to be stricken by God. In fact, he was so stricken that the British, Canadian Broadcasting filmed him. And then after he has this big thing that happens to him on the floor, he sits up and they say, what happened? And he said, I don't know. Because we didn't know. We had no idea. So we get in the car and we drive the 9 hours home and we have to decide, what are we going to do with this? And after 8.5 hours, we knew exactly what we're going to do. Absolutely nothing. We were not going to tell anyone. Nobody knew we went. She said, if this thing's still happening in like 4 months, we'll send our elders up and they can decide if they think it's a good, you know, a good thing or not. Well, God didn't wait to hear what our elders thought. Because the next Sunday, Charles, hey, are you waiting to pray? So outside, we're going to gather outside and wait to, it's a little logistics. And he put his feet, you know how the young people, they hang their feet over the edge of the platform, not the older people, the older guys, they're going to be standing back from the edge. But he hung his feet over the edge of the platform in the other church, and he said, is anyone thirsty? Come for a drink. What? 100 people charged the altar. What? How could 100 people charge the altar? Oh, my goodness. we were asking the right question. Used to be like only five people would come. It was always the same five people. So that was the first part. Then the second remarkable thing was that I decided I was going to pray. I'd been sitting on the front row saying, I'm just disappointed. I'm discouraged. But it's so easy, you know. More, Lord. I mean, I can do that. No performance pressure. So I walked up to the front. Charles is praying. There's 100 people, so I think he needs some help. So I decided to pray, and I prayed, more, Lord. And that lady started laughing. And then the next one, I moved down. Next one fell down. Nobody ever fell down when I prayed. And then the next person started crying. Now, people cried when I prayed. Okay, that one was legit. Some people started bending over and moaning and saying, oh, with like a deep intercession. And then this last guy, the fifth guy, he started bouncing around like a pogo stick. Boing, boing. He was real tall. Boing, boing, boing. And I looked at Charles, and he looked at me. He had gone in that direction, and I'd gone in this direction. And all of a sudden, we realized, well, I didn't know anything happened, but some kind of tangible anointing. God didn't wait to hear what our, you know, it had to be this way for me. Because if had it been by the power of suggestion or, listen, this is what we're going to do, or if anybody knew about it, to me, I'm sort of scientific. It had to be a sovereign thing for me to really think that it was God. And the third thing is that the fourth was my big test. When they got off the floor, or they quit hopping around, or they quit laughing or crying or jumping or screaming, their lives were changed. They were filled with the love of God. They all wanted to evangelize. They had a sense of their destiny and calling. And the thing that was probably most remarkable to me is that, well, I'll go to that. I'm going to back up just a little bit, because what people were, what was happening is God was performing these heart surgeries. He was healing people, but he was commissioning them at the same time. So when does God do both things at one time? And you know that young boy, if you were in the second service last Sunday, Jesse. Jesse's been a missionary, and they're going to YWAM. A couple of you maybe saw him. He was number four. He was 15 years old, and he was the one who was going, oh, oh. He had the nations in his belly. He has spent his whole life with the children in the nations. But was it the nations in his belly, or was he crying because of the pain of what has happened with his father, deserting the whole church and leaving his mom and his brothers and sisters there in the church? Was he moaning because of what happened, or because he had destiny and nations in his belly? And the answer is yes. Yes. Because when it's God, he's doing more than one thing at one time. So he's performing heart surgeries. He was healing people, but he was also commissioning. And it was happening across the board. So the thing that struck me is everybody became a minister. Immediately everyone became a minister. If this was their workplace, they turned it somehow, like Sue Roby. She was an aerobics instructor for the senior citizens at the Y. And she had, I have a captive audience. And I'll tell them all about Jesus. Now, arms back, arms back. And Jesus is this. And so Tom Becker, he turned his chiropractic office into a healing prayer. So he prayed for every person. People started homeless ministries, prison ministries. Every week I'd ask someone, what did you do this week? She said, oh, we made sleeping bags for the homeless, blankets, and we gave them out on Friday night with Carl, who just started a ministry for the homeless people down in. Everyone was a minister. Everyone. Even if it was in their workplace or in their home. evangelizing a neighborhood, a neighbor. So now we have this crazy phenomena of 300 people coming to church, and everybody's filled with God, and they just want to celebrate. Nobody's hungry or overfed or depressed. They're all excited. So they all come to church, and everybody's so excited and celebrating what God has done during the week. And that's how we became a fountain. I encouraged everyone. I said, go to the fountain sources, you know. Randy Clark, Rodney Howard Brown, Toronto, Brownsville, anywhere, any place. And lay on your bed and listen to what God has to say about you, and let him change your life. Until everyone became a fountain source themselves, and corporately, somehow we became a spring where others could come and get a drink. Okay. I better move it right along here. So we were a spring, but we're still a hidden spring in a renovated casket factory on 13th Street. But in 2000, and I think John Leach told you the story about how a church got the best property in all of Harrisburg. A funky little church got all the best property here because God had a bigger plan. And then we were able to build the addition in only 5 months, record time. They'd never seen anything. Where after 3 years later, we built the sanctuary. This other part of the building was already here. He probably told you about that. But Life Center became a church full of people experiencing the love of God and giving it away. And we said, free people, and heal people, heal people. And it wasn't just for a season. It's still happening. And so many people can point to the spot where they say, you know, Todd White, do you know him? He'll point to the spot, and he said, this was the spot. This is where it happened. Most guest speakers come in and say, this is where it happened. This is where it happened for me. My life was changed. So as you align yourself with Life Center, these are some of the abiding mirrors. The abiding things that are here that you can expect to align yourself with and that you can expect to have happen in your life. First of all, there are parts of the story I already told. Our salvation, we were such unlikely vessels, and he uses the inadequate to do the impossible. So if you feel in any way that you're inadequate, he is going to use you to the impossible, to do the impossible as you align yourself here. Our departure and being ousted by this amazing church religious system, and we didn't even know how to do church. But he wanted some people who would be a fresh container, not a package that we had to chain, where it was rooted in transit and tradition, though I love that. I was always thought, oh, Bill Johnson and Chae Young, where there are five generations of ministers, wouldn't it be wonderful to be that? But then there's people like Heidi Baker or Georgian Banoff, different ones like that, where it's a fresh container. And he wanted to do something with a fresh container. And so if you are a fresh container, and you know, when you come here, you think something new is happening. So that's another thing you can expect to have happen. And then, of course, our arrival and the restoration of, we had a restoration of everything that was lost to us, the church, we got everything, restoration, and also finding our destiny. I remember my sister finally came here. She was 70 years old when she came to visit me. And she said, of course, there's so many kids in our family, and you know, she didn't know anything about my life, not even a believer. And she said, Anne, you had to come here to find your destiny. You had to come here to become who you were supposed to be. I can say it for so many people, like Abby Abelness. She said, I never spoke to one governor, one leader, until I came here and I got a verse at the women's conference that said, you'll speak to leaders. And she has spent her whole life since she's been here at Life Center. So you can expect to find your destiny. You can expect the inadequate to do the impossible. You can expect for a fresh container. You can expect encounters, which you probably already had of some sort, in some form or another, where there's a Sammy Rodriguez thing that happens in your life. Or we could spend hours talking about some of these things. And then, as John shared about the church provision here, the getting this building and this best property, he's going to make a supernatural provision for what he has to do. So those are some of the things that you can expect to have happen in your life that have already transpired here, and so they start happening to you as well as you align here. So I want to conclude with an experience I had shortly after we arrived on this church property, and the youth room was where we held our, we just crowded 457 people, that's how many we could fit, into legally. into the youth room. And so the podium, the stage, was facing out to these windows, out to this hill. So during the message, you could see this hill. And as I looked at this hill, I had an open vision. That's a vision where it you actually see it. A little scary, because you think, will I ever go back and see what is really there? Yeah. And this hill, I was looking out during a message, and there were these beautiful stones. They were massive. They were all carved and shaped perfectly, and they'd been hewn in another quarry in another place. And they were walking up the hill. They walked by swinging from side to side. They walked up the hill, and they came up to the level and said, at your service, hewn in a quarry in California. At your service, hewn in a quarry in Texas. At your service, hewn in the quarry of my prayer closet. At your service, hewn in a quarry in Lancaster. At your service, hewn in a quarry at this church or that church. And I knew at that time that what God wanted to do was so, so big that he needed to bring the most amazing stones here, because he had to build something. It's his plan. So I want to thank you for perhaps being some of those stones, climbing up a hill, prepared beautifully, many of you, in other places, so that God can do something that he plans to do that's bigger than all of us. So we really value each one of you, and it's your hunger and your pilgrimage and your sacrificial lifestyles and the prices that you've paid. And I was at the conference on this week at Christ Community Church, a Supernatural Life Conference. One of the people started to give a message, I think it was Cindy Jacobs, and she began to speak about in 2 Kings, the widow, and how the vessels would come, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, as long as there were empty vessels coming, the oil kept flowing. So thank you for coming. As long as the vessels come, the oil here keeps flowing. So thank you. Thank you for your part that makes it. So I'm going to pray for you, and then we're going to bring everyone in to pray for you, and hopefully we can do the logistics in this room. Thank you that the more miracles that happen, the more miracles happen. I just thank you that this is a group of devoted and faithful and gifted and humble and risk-taking and courageous servants. So, Lord, I pray that you would welcome. You would welcome them, their gifts and their talents and their radical abandon and their devoted prayer and their sacrificial lifestyles and all the things that have been through beautifully in their lives. We honor those. We honor that, and we bless this group of people. In Jesus' name. Amen. So, Chandi, do you want to just say hello to them while I bring in the... Surely he has some. He always has something to say, right? Or any comment that you have, and I'm going to bring in the teams.
Yeah, it's so great. I remember from Messiah when I was a student, I wanted to find a church to go to. There's a circle where you pick up and drop off kids, and they were sending a bus from different churches, and I happened to get in a minivan. Say you shouldn't ride with strangers, but it was a destiny moment for me. It was Tiffany, who leads worship. Her parents were driving kids to Messiah, and that's how I ended up at Word Fellowship in 94. My life changed in that moment. I teased Tiffany that, Tiff, I think you were still in the car seat in the back. And she's like, no, I wasn't that young. And I remember these marker moments. I remember sitting in the front against the wall when Charles put his feet over the edge, and after their visit to Toronto, when Charles asked if, you know, the invitation, is anyone thirsty? I remember that moment so vividly. I remember those transition moments. So this is amazing that there's so much history. And the thing about history, when we connect to something, that these stories become our stories. Like, I get to share even some of the moments that I wasn't in. That's part of now, it's being part of the community here. It really becomes my story to share, that this is our shared history. So, and when God does things in those years, he's thinking of us today here. Does that make sense? Like, in that mystery of how God connects all those pieces, we become part of that story. We become part of that story. That's why we can share any story in the Bible. I wasn't there, but we can share it because it's our story now. So welcome to the story of Life Center, and you are a part of it, a very important part of it today.